her friend. That was what Gwyn was. It had been focus, let go. Nesta noted Gwyn's breathing, released the thought, and moved on to the next sound, then the next. Now, survey your body, Gwyn said softly, starting at your head, slowly working down to your toes. Assess how you're feeling. If there are sore spots.
Everything is sore after that sword lesson, Nesta hissed.
Gwyn choked on another laugh.
I mean it. Note if there are sore spots, if there are spots that feel good.
Papers rustled.
Oh, and the instructions also say that when you're done, you should assess how you are feeling. Don't dwell on it, but just acknowledge it.
Nesta didn't particularly like the sound of the last bit, but she obeyed. Every part of her body ached, from a stiffness in her neck to a soreness along her left foot. She hadn't realized how many little pieces of herself existed, all constantly blaring their pains or status, how much noise it produced in her head. But she acknowledged each of those things, let them drift away.
Assessing her emotions, however,
how was she feeling right now? Tired, yet content to be here with Gwyn, laughing, doing this. If she went deeper,
now we're going to work on focused breathing. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Do 10 of them, then start over. If a thought pops up, acknowledge it, then send it on its way. Tell yourself, I am the rock against which the surf crashes. Your thoughts are the surf. Let them crash over you.
Easy enough. It wasn't. The first few times Nesta counted 10 breaths, no thoughts plagued her at all. But when she began the next set,
what would Elaine think to see Nesta here with a friend?
The thought bubbled up from nowhere, as if opening her mind. It had rushed toward her. Would Elaine be pleased, or would she feel the need to warn Gwyn about Nesta's true self? She'd been on breath 5. No, 6. Wait, maybe it had only been 3.
Start over if you lose count, Gwyn said,
as if she heard the halt of Nesta's steady breathing. Nesta did so, focusing on the breaths and not Elaine.
I acknowledge this thought about my sister, and I am letting it go.
She was on her 7th breath when her sister appeared again, and yet somehow all you think of is what my trauma did to you. Had Elaine been right? Feyre had admitted she was guilty of it too, but Feyre hadn't known Elaine as Nesta did, or it hadn't been that way before, before Elaine had chosen Feyre, before Amran had chosen Feyre, before.
I acknowledge these thoughts, and I am letting them go.
Nesta inhaled an 8th time. I am focusing on my breathing. These thoughts exist, and I am letting them pass me by. Nesta took another breath, forced her mind to think only of her breathing.
When you finish your next set of 10, Gwyn said, near and yet far away, stop counting your breaths and just let your mind do as it wishes. We'll do that for a few heartbeats, then stop. The goal is to work up to longer and longer periods of this.
Nesta did so, counting each of the 10 remaining breaths, feeling that moment of halting like a looming wave. She finished the 10th breath. Do as you want, mind. Go drift into those dark, horrible places. It didn't, though. Her mind lingered, didn't wander. It just sat there, contented, resting, like a cat curled at her feet, stilled. Only a few moments passed before Gwyn whispered,
begin to sink back into your body Mark the sounds around us. Mark the feeling in your fingers, your toes. Strange, so strange, to find her body suddenly calmed, distant, like she'd somehow indeed been able to step back, let it rest, and her mind. "Open your eyes," Gwyn breathed. Nesta did, and for the first time in her life, she felt utterly settled into her own skin.
Chapter 40. The rain kept falling for 2 days, the temperatures plummeting with it. Leaves lay scattered around Valaris, and the Sidra was now a silver snake, sometimes hidden by the drifting mists. The females showed up every damn day without fail. But only Nesta stood at his side as he knocked on the door of the small blacksmith's shop on the western outskirts of Valaris. The gray-stoned, thatched roof shop hadn't changed in the 5 centuries he'd been patronizing it. He'd bought all his non-Illyrian weapons there. He'd have taken her to an Illyrian blacksmith, but they were mostly backward, superstitious males who wanted females nowhere near their shops. The ruddy-skinned, high-fey male who opened the door for them was skilled and kind, if gruff.
"General,"
the male said, wiping his sooty hands on his stained leather apron. He opened the door wider, delicious heat blasting out to meet them in the chilled rain. The blacksmith's dark eyes swept over Nesta, noting her soaked hair and leathers, the calm intensity of her features, despite the awful weather. She'd had that same look on her face in every line of her body while training this morning, and when Cassian had issued the invitation to join him here during the lunch hour. He'd invited all of the females, but Emery had to return to Windhaven, and the priestesses had been unwilling to leave the mountain. So only Nesta had come with him to the small village, with the city looming on its eastern side and broad, flat plains stretching away toward the sea to the west.
"How can I assist you?"
Cassian nudged Nesta forward with a hand to the small of her back and grinned at the male.
"I want Lady Nesta to learn how a blade is made before she picks up a real one."
The blacksmith surveyed her again.
"I don't need an apprentice, I'm afraid."
"Just a quick demonstration,"
Cassian said, keeping his smile in place as he glanced to Nesta, who was staring over the blacksmith's broad shoulder into the workshop behind him. The blacksmith frowned deeply, so Cassian added,
"I want her to learn how much work and skill goes into the process, to show her that a blade is not merely a tool for killing, but a piece of art as well."
Flattery always helped smooth the way. Rhys had taught him that. Nesta's gaze shifted to the blacksmith's face, and for a moment they stared at each other. Then Nesta said, "Whatever you can show me in whatever free time you have would be much appreciated." Cassian tried not to show his surprise at her polite words, the hint of deference. It seemed to do the trick as the blacksmith waved them in. Nesta listened while the dark-haired male explained the various stages of forging a blade, from the quality of the ore to the proving. Cassian kept near her, asking questions of his own, since she said little herself. One of the few times she'd spoken had been to request to move away from the roaring fires of the forge room to the quieter, cooler dark of the workshop proper. But as the blacksmith finished going over the design process for more ornate blades, Nesta asked, "Can I try it?" At the blacksmith's hesitation, Nesta stepped forward, eyes on the doorway beyond them, filled with the bellowing of the forge. "Hammering the blades, I mean. If you have any to spare?" She glanced at Cassian.
"You'll be compensated, of course."
Cassian nodded.
"We'll pay for the blades if they're damaged."
The blacksmith surveyed Nesta again, as if testing the ore in her, then nodded.
"I've got a few you could try your hand at."
He led them back into the heat and flame and light, and Cassian could have sworn Nesta was inhaling and exhaling in a perfect, controlled rhythm.
She kept her gaze only on the blacksmith, however, as he carried over a half-made sword and laid it upon the anvil. Pretty, but ordinary. A common, everyday sword, the blacksmith said. After a swift, flawless demonstration, he handed her the hammer.
Brace your feet like so,
the blacksmith said, and Nesta followed his instructions until she lifted the hammer above one shoulder and swung down. A clanking thunk sounded, and the sword clattered. A clumsy near miss. Nesta gritted her teeth. That's not as easy as it looks. The blacksmith pointed to the sword.
Try again. It takes a while to grow accustomed to it.
Cassian had never heard the male speak so gently. Normally, their conversations were swift and to the point, free of formalities or personal tidbits. Nesta struck the sword again. A better hit this time, but still a sorry blow. Coals popped in the forge behind them, and Nesta flinched. Before Cassian could ask why, she'd gritted her teeth again and struck the sword a third time, fourth, fifth. By the time the blacksmith brought out a dagger, she'd gotten the hang of it, was even smiling slightly.
Daggers require a different technique,
the blacksmith explained, again demonstrating. So much work and skill and dedication, all for an ordinary blade. Cassian shook his head. When had he last stopped to appreciate the craftsmanship and labor that went into his weapons? Sweat beaded Nesta's brow as she hammered at the dagger, blows and body surer now. Pride wended through his chest. Here she was, that female who'd been forged during the war with Highburn, but different, more focused, stronger. Cassian was only half listening when the blacksmith brought out a great sword, but he snapped to attention as Nesta fell upon it in one smooth movement, the hammer striking clear and true. Strike after strike, and Cassian could have sworn the world paused as she unleashed herself with the same intensity she brought to training. The blacksmith smiled at her. The first time Cassian had ever seen the male do so. Nesta's arm arched above her. The hammer gripped in her clenched fingers. It was a dance, each of her movements timed to the ringing echo of the hammer on the blade. She pounded the sword to a music no one but she could hear. Cassian let her keep at it. The rain and wind rustling the thatched roof, a distant counterbeat above them. And began to wonder what would emerge from the heat and shadows. Learning swordplay was no easy task. It required repetition and muscle memory and patience. But Nesta, Emery, and Gwyn were game. No? Cassian realized as he watched them put away their swords in the icy rain that continued the next day. They were more than game. They trained with a newfound, steady focus. No one more so than Nesta, who now shelved her sword and took up a length of linen. She began wrapping her hands, rolling her neck as she did so. They hadn't spoken after the blacksmith lesson yesterday afternoon, though she'd thanked him quietly upon returning to the House of Wind. She'd had that intensity upon her face again, eyes distant, as if focusing on some invisible target. So he hadn't sought her out last night, even though every part of him had screamed to do so. But he'd give her time, let her initiate when she was ready, if she wanted him again. Cassian shut down the thought, allowed the icy rain to cool his desire, his dread. In silence, Nesta approached the punching block, a fallen tree trunk that had been wrapped in thick blankets. She approached it as if she were facing an opponent. She glanced over her shoulder to Cassian as she stopped before it, a question in her eyes. He nodded.
You want to use the last 15 minutes to spar? Go ahead. That was all she needed, and he was too pleased to say more as Nesta took up her fighting stance and began punching.
The first impact of her knuckles against the padded wood hurt, but she hit where she was supposed to,
and her thumb remained where she'd made it learn to stay. And when she pulled her arm back, the pain became a song. She threw another punch, eliciting a satisfying thunk from the wood. Good. It felt good. To get it out, to channel it this way. Her breathing was sharp as a blade, but she threw a left hook, then two jabs of her right fist. She didn't feel the rain, didn't feel the cold. Every punch carried her fear, her rage, her hate out of her body and into that wood. For 3 days she'd had fire in her blood. For 3 days she had dreamed of swords and stairs and combat. She couldn't stop it, had fallen into bed so tired that she had no chance to even read before she was unconscious. There certainly had been no sex with Cassian, not even a smoldering glance over the dining table. Azriel's presence helped. He now trained the newest recruits, quiet and gentle, yet unfaltering. And if she didn't know better, she'd swear at least two of the priestesses, Roslyn and Ilana, sighed every time he walked past. Some small, awful part of her was glad they didn't sigh over Cassian. She punched that thought out of herself, too. That pathetic, selfish thought. Just as all of her was pathetic and selfish and hateful. 1-2. 2-1-1. She punched and punched, throwing all of herself into the wood.
By the cauldron,
a familiar male voice said beside Cassian, and he turned to find Lucian in the archway to the training area. The rest of the priestesses and Azriel had left 10 minutes earlier. Nesta hadn't even noticed.
Feyre said she was training, but I didn't realize she was, well, training.
Cassian nodded his hello, keeping his eyes on Nesta where she punched the padded wood over and over, just as she had for the last 25 minutes straight. She'd gone into a place Cassian knew too well, where thought and body became one, where the world faded to nothing, working something out from deep inside of herself.
Did you think she was filing her nails?
Lucian's mechanical eye clicked. His face tightened as Nesta threw a spectacular left hook into the wood beam. It shuddered with the impact.
I wonder if there are some things that should not be awoken, he murmured.
Cassian cut him a glare.
Mind your own business, fireling.
Lucian just watched Nesta attack, his golden skin a little pale.
Why are you here?
Cassian asked, unable to help the sharpness.
Where's Elaine?
I am not always in this city to see my mate.
The last two words dripped with discomfort.
And I came up here because Feyre said I should. I need to kill a few hours before I'm to meet with her and Rhys. She thought I might enjoy seeing Nesta at work.
She's not a carnival attraction,
Cassian said through his teeth.
It's not for entertainment.
Lucian's red hair gleamed in the dimness of the rainy day.
I think Feyre wanted a progress assessment from someone who hasn't seen her in a while.
And?
Cassian bit out. Lucian threw him a withering look.
I'm not your enemy, you know. You can drop the aggressive brute act.
Cassian gave him a grin that didn't meet his eyes.
Who says it's an act?
Lucian let out a long sigh.
Very well, then.
Nesta threw another series of punches, and Cassian knew she was leading up to the knockout blow. Two left jabs and a right hook that slammed into the wood so hard it splintered. And then she stopped. Her fist pressed against the wood. Her panting breath swirled from her mouth in the frigid rain. Slowly she straightened, fist lowering, steam rippling through her teeth as she turned. He caught a flicker of silver fire in her eyes. Then it vanished. Lucian had gone still. Nesta stalked toward the two males. She met Lucian's stare as she approached the archway and said nothing before continuing into the house, as if words were beyond her. Only when her footsteps vanished did Lucian say,
Mother spare you all.
Cassian was already walking to the wooden beam. A small disc of impact lay in its center. Through the padding, all the way to the wood itself, it glowed. Cassian raised shaking fingers to it, the burn mark still sparking like an ember. The entire woodblock was smoldering from within. He touched his palm to it. The wood was cold as ice. The block dissolved into a pile of cinders. Cassian stared in stunned silence, the smoking wood hissing in the rain. Lucian came up beside him. He only said again, voice solemn,
"Mother spare you all."
Chapter 41. Helion, High Lord of the Day Court, arrived at the Hewn City the next afternoon on a flying horse. He'd wanted to enter the Dark City in a golden chariot led by four snow-white horses with manes of golden fire, Rhys had told Cassian. But Rhys had forbidden the chariot and horses and let Helion know that he could winnow in or not come at all. Hence the Pegasus, Helion's idea of a compromise. Cassian had heard the rumors of Helion's rare Pegasuses. Myth claimed his prized stallion had flown so high the sun had scorched him black. But beholding the beast now, well, Cassian might have been envious if he didn't have wings himself. The winged horses were rare, so rare that it was said Helion's seven breeding pairs of flying horses were the only ones left. Lore held that there had once been far more of them before recorded history, and that most had just vanished, as if they'd been devoured by the sky itself. Their population had dwindled further in the last 1,000 years, for reasons no one could explain. This hadn't been helped by Amarantha, who had butchered 3 dozen of Helion's Pegasuses, in addition to burning so many of his libraries. The 7 Pegasus pairs that remained had survived thanks to being set free before Amarantha's cronies could reach their pens in the highest tower of Helion's palace. Helion's most beloved pair, this black stallion Mialin and his mate, hadn't produced offspring in 300 years, and that last foal hadn't made it out of weaning before he'd succumbed to an illness no healer could remedy. According to legend, the Pegasuses had come from the island the prison sat upon, had once fed in fair meadows that had long given way to moss and mist. Perhaps that was part of the decline. Their homeland had vanished, and whatever had sustained them there was no longer. Cassian let himself admire the sight of Mialin alighting on the black stones of the courtyard before the towering gates into the mountain, the stallion's mane blowing in the wind off his jet-black wings. Few things remained in the fairy realms that could summon any sort of wonder from Cassian, but that magnificent stallion, proud and haughty and only half-tamed, snatched the breath from his chest.
"Incredible,"
Rhys murmured, similar admiration shining in his face. Feyre beamed with delight, and Cassian knew from that look that she'd be painting this beast, and possibly its stunning master as well. Asriel, too, blinked in awe as the stallion pawed at the ground, huffing, and Helion patted the Pegasus's thick, muscular neck before dismounting.
"Well met," Rhys said, striding forward. "It's not the parade I wished," Helion said, clasping Rhys's hand, "but Mialin knows how to make an entrance."
He let out a whistle, and the Pegasus pivoted gracefully, despite his size, flapped those mighty wings, and leaped back into the skies to wait elsewhere for his master. Helion grinned at Feyre, who'd watched the stallion soar into the clouds with wide eyes. He said,
"I'll take you on a ride if you wish."
Feyre smiled. "I would ordinarily take you up on that offer, but I'm afraid I can't risk it." Helion's brows lifted. For a heartbeat, Rhys and Feyre conferred silently, and then Rhys nodded. Reese's voice filled Cassian's head a second later.
We're telling him.
Cassian kept his face neutral.
Why risk it?
Reese said solemnly,
because we need his libraries.
To find a way to save Feyre, Reese didn't say. His High Lord went on,
and because you and Azriel were right, it's only a matter of time until Feyre is showing. She's indulged my request for a shield, but she'll have my balls if I suggest glamoring her to hide the pregnancy.
Reese grimaced.
So here we go.
Cassian nodded.
I've got your back, brother.
Reese threw him a grateful glance, and then must have lifted his shield on his mate, because Feyre's scent, that wonderful, lovely scent, filled the air. Helion's eyes widened, going right to her middle, where her hand now rested against the small swelling. He let out a laugh.
So, this is why you needed to learn about impenetrable shields, Rhysand.
Helion leaned in to kiss Feyre's cheek.
My congratulations to you both.
Feyre beamed, but Reese's smile was less open. If Helion noted it, he said nothing. The High Lord of Day considered Cassian and Azriel, then frowned.
Where's my beautiful Moor?
Az said tightly.
Away.
Pity. She's far nicer to look at than either of you.
Cassian rolled his eyes. Helion smirked, picking an invisible fleck of lint from his draped white robe, then faced Reese. His dark brown skin gleamed over the strong muscles of his bare thighs and legs, the golden sandals that laced up his calves, useless in the snow-capped terrain around them. The High Lord carried no weapons. The only metal on him was the golden armband around one muscled bicep, fashioned after a snake, and the spiked golden crown atop his shoulder-length black hair. There would never be any mistaking Helion for anything but a High Lord, yet Cassian had always rather liked his casual, irreverent air. The male drawled to Reese,
Well, you wanted me to do some digging into a spell? Or was that an excuse to get me to your twisted pleasure palace under this mountain?
Reese sighed. Please don't make me regret bringing you here, Helion. Helion's golden eyes lit.
Where would the fun be if I didn't?
Feyre linked her arm through his. I missed you, my friend.
Helion patted her hand. I'll deny it to the grave if you tell anyone, but I've missed you too, Cursebreaker. I like this palace much more than the one beneath.
Helion said an hour later, surveying the moonstone pillars and gauzy curtains blowing in a mild breeze that belied the snow-crusted mountain range around them. Beyond the palace's shields, Cassian knew that breeze became a howling, bitter wind that could flay the flesh from one's bones. Helion flung himself into a low-lying chair before one of the endless views, sighing,
All right. Do you want my assessment now that we're out of the Hewn City?
Feyre slid into the seat beside his, but Cassian, Reese, and Az remained standing, the Shadow Singer leaning against a pillar, half hidden from sight. Feyre asked, Are the soldiers enchanted? Helion had spoken to and briefly touched the hands of the two Autumn Court soldiers chained in that room, kept alive and fed by Reese's magic. Helion's face had tensed when he'd touched their hands, and he'd then murmured that he'd seen enough. Nothing in the Hewn City had seemed to disturb him until that moment. Not the towering black pillars and their carvings, not the wicked people who occupied it, not the utter darkness of the place. If it reminded Helion of his time under the mountain, he did not let on. Amarantha had modeled her court there after this one, apparently. A sorry replica, Reese had said.
Enchanted isn't the right word,
Helion said, frowning.
Their bodies and actions are indeed not their own, but no spell lies upon them. I can feel spells, like threads,
ones that can enchant feel like bindings around an individual. I sensed none of that.
So what ails them?
Rhys asked.
I don't know.
Helion admitted with unusual gravity.
Rather than a thread, it was more like a mist, a fog, exactly as you described it, Rhysand.
There was nothing to grasp onto, nothing tangible to break, yet it was there.
Rhys asked, does it feel less like a spell and more like an influence?
Shit. Shit! Helion rubbed his jaw. I can't explain how, but it's as if this fog around their mind sways them.
He noted their expressions.
What is it?
Feyre's mouth tightened. The crown, part of the Dread Trove. And then it all came out. Queen Briallen and her hunt for the Trove. Kosche's involvement, the mask that Nesta had retrieved. Only Eris's secrets regarding the depths of Baron's treachery remained unspoken. When Feyre finished, Helion shook his head slowly.
I thought we'd at least have a break from trying to avoid disasters like this.
Just the harp remains at large, then,
Azrael said. He remained leaning against the pillar, swathed in shadows.
If Briallen has the crown, it's possible she's had it for a while, and it's why the other queens fled to their own territories. Maybe they thought she'd use it on them and ran. Maybe she even found it here during the war, while we were all distracted with fighting Hybern, and used it to pull her forces back, to bide her time. It could be what brought her to Kosche's attention, that it's what he wants from her.
I can buy that, Feyre said. But why use it on Eris's soldiers to attack our people in Urid? What's the motive?
Perhaps it was to let us know that she's aware that we know of her plans,
Rhys suggested.
But how did she know we'd be in the bog?
Cassian asked.
Those soldiers didn't have the power to winnow. They would have had to travel on foot for weeks before they got there.
They've been missing for more than a month, Feyre pointed out. Helion said,
remember that Briallen is made, too. She might not be able to scry for the cauldron, but she can scry for the Dread Trove as well as Nesta Archeron can. She could have learned the mask was in Urid, but did not dare to venture into its darkness. It's possible that she planted the soldiers to take the mask from you once you found it.
Or trick us into killing them, thus making an enemy of the Autumn Court, Cassian said. But Briallen has to be stupid, Feyre said, if she thinks those soldiers would be enough to overpower any of us. Helion nodded to Feyre.
You said the mask is here now? May I see it?
We need your help with it, actually, Feyre said. Rhys warded and locked the room where the mask lies, but it opened the locks to let my sister in, likely because she's made. And if she can get in, it's possible Briallen could as well. Feyre slid her tattooed hands into her pockets. Can you show Nesta how to ward it herself? Something perhaps with a bit more oomph.
Oomph?
Rhys asked, lifting an eyebrow. Oomph, Feyre said, throwing him a glare. We can't all be silver-tongued like you. Rhys winked.
Good thing you benefit from it, Feyre, darling.
Cassian chose to ignore the innuendo and the flicker of arousal from both of them. Helion, however, snickered. Azrael cleared his throat.
Nesta's waiting.
She's here?
Helion practically shimmered with golden light. Yes, Feyre said simply, rising from the chair. Cassian didn't miss the sultry look his high lady gave Rhys as she passed by, aiming for the rooms at the northern end of the palace. He didn't miss the deep laugh Rhys gave her in return, full of sensual promise.
He couldn't help the pang in his chest at the casual intimacy, the blatant affection and love. A far cry from just sex. Helion trailed, commenting on the palace's beauty. Cassian blocked him out, too busy mulling over how Nesta hadn't so much as bothered to object when he'd left her bed, and hadn't so much as approached him for more since. He'd held himself back, especially since she seemed to drive herself into the ground during practice, working out whatever she needed to in her heart, her mind. But he hadn't been able to stop remembering it. The sex, and that image of her, her backside still upraised as she lay on the bed, her beautiful sex, swollen and gleaming, wet with his seed.
What are you thinking about?
Helion drawled as they approached a shut wooden door. Cassian straightened. He hadn't realized his thoughts had dragged such a scent from him. He grinned.
Your mother.
Helion chuckled.
I always forget how much I like you. Happy to remind you.
Cassian winked. Feyre reached the door, knocked, and then there she was. Nesta. She sat at the table where the mask rested, a book open before her. From the speed with which she shut the volume, Cassian knew she'd been reading one of the romances she, Emery, and Gwyn traded amongst them. Cassian found himself tensing as Helion stepped into the room and Nesta rose. She'd worn a dark blue dress today, the first time in a month he'd seen her in one. No longer did it hang off her. She'd packed on enough weight that the bodice was again form-fitting, and those lush breasts swelled gracefully above the scooped neckline. Helion offered a bow of his head, the epitome of courtly grace.
Lady Nesta.
Nesta bobbed a curtsy, but her eyes cut to Feyre. Lady? Feyre shrugged. He's being polite. Nesta slid her eyes to Cassian's.
Now I understand why you find the title grating.
He smiled, and Helion blinked, as if shocked she'd forgotten a high lord stood before her. But Nesta had blown past Helion the first time they'd met too, utterly unimpressed. Cassian said to her,
It never gets easier.
Nesta faced Helion again, taking in that spiked golden crown and the draped white robe.
Was that your winged horse that flew over earlier?
Helion's smile was a thing of cultivated beauty.
He's my finest stallion.
He's lovely.
As are you.
Nesta angled her head as Cassian found himself near breathless, waiting for her reply. Feyre and Rhys seemed to be trying not to laugh, and Asriel was the portrait of cool boredom. Nesta surveyed Helion for long enough that he shifted on his feet. A high lord shifted on his feet under her gaze. She said at last,
I appreciate the compliment.
And that was that. That pause while she'd surveyed Helion had been a courtier's pause, assessing how best to strike. Helion frowned slightly. Rhys cleared his throat, amusement glittering in his eyes.
Well, there it is.
He pointed to the black velvet mound on the table.
Nesta?
She pulled away the cloth. Ancient, beaten gold gleamed, and Helion hissed as a cold, strange power filled the room, whispering like a chill breeze. Helion whirled to Nesta. All sensuality vanished.
You truly wore this and lived.
It wasn't a question meant to be answered.
Cover it again, please. I can't stand it.
Rhys tucked in his wings.
It affects you that much? Doesn't it rake its cold claws down your senses?
Helion asked.
Not as much as all that,
Feyre said. We can sense its power, but it didn't bother any of us so seriously. Helion shuddered, and Nesta threw the cloth over the mask, as if the cloth somehow blinded it to their presence. Perhaps an ancestor of mine once used it, and the warning of its cost is imprinted upon my blood.
Helion shook out a breath.
All right. Not Lady Nesta. Allow me to show you some warding tricks even clever Rhysand doesn't know.
In the end, Helion created the wards and keyed them to Nesta's blood. A pinprick of it, courtesy of Truth Teller, had done the job, and Cassian had found himself tensing at the sight of that little red bead, its scent. It was an effort of will to tell his body there was no threat, that the blood was willing, that she was fine. But it didn't stop him from grinding his teeth loudly enough that Feyre whispered to him beneath Nesta's and Helion's conversation.
What's wrong with you?
Cassian muttered back,
nothing. Stop being such a busybody, curse breaker.
Feyre shot him a sidelong glance.
You're acting like a caged animal.
Her lips curved upward.
Are you jealous?
Cassian kept his voice neutral.
Of Helion?
I don't see anyone else in this room who's currently holding my sister's hand and smiling at her.
The bastard was indeed doing that, though. Nesta remained stone-faced.
Why would I be jealous?
Feyre's laugh was a rustle of air. Cassian couldn't stop his answering grin, earning a confused glance from Azrael. Cassian shook his head just as Nesta pulled her hand from Helion's grip and asked,
So it's done? Once we leave this room, no one shall be able to enter it. Even you, if you do not unlock my wards, cannot enter.
Nesta loosed a little sigh.
Good. I'll show you the unlocking spell, Helion said.
But she stepped away from him.
No,
Nesta said abruptly. No, I don't want to know it. Silence fell. Nesta declared to none of them in particular.
If Briallen is hunting for the mask, if she apprehends me, I don't want to have any knowledge of how to free it.
It was wise, even if it made him sick to consider, but he could have sworn it was a lie. Could have sworn that Nesta didn't want to have access to the information for herself. As if she might be tempted by the mask.
Rhys said, That's fine. Helion can show me, and if we need the knowledge, I'll show you.
Rhys held out a hand to Helion, indicating how he'd prefer to be shown the spell, their fingers interlaced, their eyes going vacant. And then Rhys blinked.
Thank you.
Azrael said,
We have to notify Eris about his soldiers' reappearance and what we did to them.
Cassian surveyed his family, his friends.
How much do we tell Eris? Do we tell him we have the mask?
The question hung there. Then Rhys said,
Not yet.
He nodded to Cassian.
Pay Eris a visit tomorrow.
Rhys gestured to Nesta.
You go with him.
Nesta stiffened and Cassian tried not to gape.
Why?
She asked.
Because you savor playing the game,
Rhys said. He'd undoubtedly noticed how smoothly she dealt with Helion's attempts to flirt earlier.
Rhys knew how to wield a tool at his disposal.
But it's your choice, he added.
Cassian cleared his throat.
Sounds fine to me.
Nesta, to his surprise, didn't object.
I want to confirm that Briallen has the crown, Azrael said. I'll travel to the human lands tomorrow.
No,
Feyre and Rhys said at the same time, in the same breath. Azrael's eyes shuddered.
I wasn't asking for permission.
Rhys smirked.
Doesn't matter.
Az opened his mouth to object, but Feyre said, You're not going, Azrael. If Briallen has the crown and catches you, even if she just suspects you're nearby, who knows what she could do to you?
Give me some credit, Feyre,
Az said.
I can keep hidden well enough.
We take no risks, Feyre said, voice flat with command. Pull all your spies out.
Like hell I will.
Cassian braced himself, but Feyre didn't back down. Information from your spies, any spies, can't be trusted with the crown in play. Amryn said it needs close contact to sink its claws into someone's mind. We stay far away from Briallen. Azriel bristled and turned to Rhys.
And you agree with her?
She's your high lady, Rhys said coldly. What she says is law.
Az eyed him, eyed Feyre, determined that they were an immovable unit, an impenetrable wall against which his fury would only break again and again. In the taut silence, Helion nodded to the bright hall beyond the room.
I would like to remove myself from the mask's odious presence and perhaps enjoy your palace, Rhysand. It's been a long while since I was in a place of such quiet. If you'll allow it, I'll stay here for an hour or two.
Something bothering you at home? Rhys inquired, falling into step beside the High Lord. Cassian caught Nesta's stare as he left the room, and she grabbed her book before following them out. Feyre exited with Azriel, murmuring with a tattooed hand on his shoulder. Cassian asked Nesta,
What are you reading today?
A brief history of the great sieges by Ossian.
He almost stumbled a step. Not a romance?
I realized after you left me the dance of battle that there is a great deal left for me to learn. Last night I asked the house to give me something you might read.
Why?
Nesta tucked the book under an arm. What's the point in learning fighting techniques if I don't know their true purpose and uses? You'd train me into a weapon, and I'd be just that, someone else's weapon. I want to know how to wield it. Myself, I mean, and others. Cassian was stunned into silence as they ascended the steps, following Helion and Rhys, who chatted away at the head of their group.
You plan on leading an army, Ness?
Not an army. She glanced sidelong at him. But perhaps a small unit of females. She was dead serious.
The priestesses.
I don't know if they'd join, but there are others out there, I'm sure, who might. I'm immortal now, or as close to it as possible. I have nothing but time to plan far into the future. His chest tightened.
Planning for the future. It was a hell of a good sign.
Cassian knocked on Nesta's bedroom door at the house after dinner. She hadn't joined him and Azriel, though perhaps it had been for the best. The High Lord and High Lady of the Night Court had faced off against the Shadow Singer this afternoon and emerged triumphant. Perhaps triumphant wasn't the right word, but the argument had ended with Azriel grudgingly agreeing not to spy on Briallen for the time being, and brooding all through dinner. Nesta's voice echoed through the wood. Enter. He found her in bed, a book propped up against her knees. It appeared she'd gone back to romance.
No more war books?
He held up the three he had brought with him, his reason for being here. His excuse. Only during the day. She sat up, gathering the blankets around her waist. What are those?
More texts I thought you might be interested in.
He set them on the desk. Nesta dipped her chin in a shallow nod, her long braid bobbing over her chest with the movement. She wore a long-sleeved nightgown, and though there was no fire in the hearth, the room stayed warm, as if the house had noted her dislike for fires and heated it another way. He forced himself to move from the desk to aim for her door again. She said before he'd reached the archway, Was it not good for you? Cassian turned slowly.
What?
A flush stained her cheeks as she lifted her chin. Was the sex not good for you? He swallowed.
Why would you ask that?
Nesta's throat bobbed. She was...
Fuck.
Was she really that unsure of him?
You left quickly and didn't seek me out again.
I left quickly because I needed to keep some pieces of myself intact.
You've been focused on training.
Her eyes flickered with something like hurt.
All right. Well, good night.
I didn't mean it like that.
Fuck, Nesta.
He walked toward the bed, and she straightened again, peering at him as he towered over her.
How could I be so selfish? To demand more sex from you when you're so invested in training.
It's not a demand if both sides want it, she said. And I just worried you didn't enjoy it as much as I did.
You think I haven't sought you out because I didn't enjoy myself?
When she said nothing, he braced his hands on either side of her and leaned in to whisper in her ear, breathing in her scent.
I enjoyed myself too much. I've thought about it for days and days.
She shivered, and he smiled against the soft shell of her ear. He loved this, seeing that icy exterior crumble, seeing how he affected her.
Have you been touching yourself at night, thinking about it like I do?
Nesta's chin dipped in the barest of nods. And from the corner of his eye, he spied a flash of her teeth as she bit her bottom lip.
Have those sweet little fingers felt as good as mine?
Her breathing hitched, but she wouldn't answer. He knew she didn't want to give him the satisfaction. He nipped at her earlobe, drawing a gasp from her.
Well?
I don't know, she whispered. I'd have to see again. Cassian lowered his mouth, pressing a kiss beneath her ear. His cock hardened, already aching against his pants.
Shall we do a little side-by-side comparison?
She whimpered, and he crawled onto the bed, straddling her legs. His blood pounded through every inch of him, in time to the pulse in his cock, and he pulled away from her neck to find her eyes bright with desire. The world quieted, and she stared and stared at him as he slowly pulled the blankets down to her waist. Her nightgown was rucked up her thighs, and he ran a hand over one of them, thumb stroking the sleek muscles building there.
Why don't you show me how you touch yourself, Nesta? And then I'll remind you how I touch you.
He bared his teeth in a wicked grin.
You can tell me what feels better.
Her chest heaved, her pebbled breasts peeking through the nightgown. His mouth watered, body trembling with the restraint needed to keep him from putting his mouth over them. She seemed to read every line of his body, his desire. Her eyes glinted with molten fire.
While I touch myself, you are forbidden to touch me.
A feral smile.
And
forbidden to touch yourself. His skin heated, stretching too tight over his bones.
All right.
Cassian waited for her to nestle into the pillows, but she grabbed the hem of her nightgown to pull it over herself, bunching it into a ball before chucking it to the floor.
Every thought eddied from his mind as she half reclined there, utterly naked, those beautiful breasts peaked and waiting for him, her silken flesh near glowing, and between her legs. She drew her knees up slightly, spreading them, baring herself.
Cassian made a low, pained sound. Her pink sex gleamed, its heady, seductive scent beckoning. He needed to taste it, to feel her on his tongue, on his cock.
No touching, Nesta purred, because his hand had been drifting toward his cock,
desperate for any sort of relief from the sight of her, open and bare,
the fey lights gilding her.
His breath rasped in his throat, and then vanished entirely as Nesta slid two delicate fingers down her body. They stopped atop that bundle of nerves, circling slowly. Her breathing turned uneven, but she watched him observe her as she made another circle and then moved lower, a slow, torturous slide down her center before her wrist curved and she dipped her fingers into herself. Cassian groaned, hips bucking a bit where he knelt, and she cut him a reprimanding look. He stilled, unable to think about anything other than her two fingers as she slid them into herself again, and moaned. They emerged, shining with her wetness, and he might have been panting as she plunged them into herself a third time, deep and slow. "This?" she breathed, her fingers beginning a slow, steady pump. "Is what I do? When I think of you every night." If she so much as touched him, he'd come. But he growled, "Do it harder." She shivered as if his words were a physical touch, and obeyed. They both groaned this time, and he found himself saying, "Please." He didn't know what it meant, only that he needed to touch her. Nesta smiled at him with feline amusement. "Not yet." She dove her hand between her legs again. "I imagine you taking me over and over again, rough like we did before." He couldn't breathe, couldn't do anything but stare at her hand, her pleasure-hazed face. "I imagine you less patient than you were the first time, just thrusting into me all the way." She echoed her words with a swift plunge of her fingers. "I don't want to hurt you," he got out, praying to the mother and the cauldron to maintain his sanity. "You won't hurt me." Her other hand teased that bundle of nerves. "I want you unleashed." Cassian made a low noise of need. She huffed a wicked laugh. "Do you want me to come, or do you want to taste it?"
Taste.
He'd beg on hot coals for one lick of her. She spread her legs wider. "Then have at me, Cassian." His name on her lips was his undoing. He gripped her thighs and spread them wide. And then his mouth was on her, licking her from base to apex in a long, luxurious slide. She moaned louder than the first time, and he only grabbed her legs again, hooking them over his shoulders as he buried his face against her. There was nothing gentle in it, nothing teasing. He feasted with tongue and lips and teeth, and every taste of her made the roaring in his blood rise like a mighty wave within him. Nesta ground against him, toes tickling his wings so much he had to pause for a moment to keep from coming at that mere touch. He'd teach her wing play later, because he wanted her to touch his wings, to learn where to stroke while he fucked her, so that he'd come hard enough to see stars, to learn what places to stroke, even while he wasn't fucking her, so he'd come in her hand, her mouth. He slid his tongue into her core, release already building under his skin, in his spine. Too soon. He didn't want to go too soon. He made himself take a breath, made himself pull back, pull away. The sight of her on the pillows, naked and open for him, nearly made him come. But he removed his shirt, his pants. Only when he was naked, kneeling between her legs, his cock jutting forward, did he say, "Do you want my fingers, my tongue, or my cock, Nesta?" He fisted the last item for her, pumping himself in a slow, nearly painful squeeze. She watched, eyes widening, as if remembering the size of him inside her. What of a side-by-side comparison? She managed to say, but the haughtiness wasn't in her eyes, not as he pumped himself again, savoring how it made her breath catch. Whatever you want, whatever you need from me. He knew those were a fool's words, knew he offered up too much. But she only looked at his cock. I want that. Now. He muttered a prayer of thanks to the mother and lay over her, bracing himself on his arms. Put me inside you. When Nesta's hand wrapped around him, he arched, gritting his teeth. She smiled at that and pumped him as hard as he'd pumped himself, just this side of pain. Then she fitted him to her drenched entrance. He didn't wait this time, didn't go tenderly, not when she'd told him she wanted it otherwise. Cassian plunged into her, driving right to the hilt. Nesta let out a sound, somewhere between a moan and a scream, and he found himself echoing it as all her silken blazing heat gripped him. She was so perfectly, mind-meltingly tight. As if she'd been made for him, and he'd been made for her. Cassian drew out in a long slide and thrust back, seating himself fully. Her fingernails dug into his shoulders, the pain of it secondary, the pain of it a pleasure as she marked him. He withdrew again, lowering his head to watch his cock slide out of her, gleaming with her wetness. And then enter her anew, every inch into that tight, blazing core of her was paradise and torment. And he needed more, needed to be deeper, needed to crawl so far inside her that there would be no disentangling them. Her nails sliced through his skin, and the tang of his blood filled the air. He just leaned down to kiss her. She parted for him instantly, and he let her taste herself on his tongue, moving his own in time to his thrusts. Nesta wrapped her lips around his tongue and sucked on it as she had his cock, and any sane thought faded away. Gathering her to him, Cassian knelt, her legs locking around his waist as he thrust up and up and up into her. She tipped her head back, baring her throat, and he bit down on the center of it, hard enough to leave a mark. Nesta moved on his cock, and he drove deeper into her, scraped his teeth over her neck. She let go of his shoulder to cup her breast, and he nearly climaxed as he found her lifting it up toward him in silent command. Cassian licked her nipple, and she ground onto him, those delicate inner muscles clenching tight. "Fuck," he said around her breast. She laughed breathily and did it again. Then there was only his tongue and teeth at her breast, the near savage pounding of his cock into her tight warmth, the rhythm of her hips as she met him for each stroke, as if trying to work him even deeper. He dragged his mouth from her breast to bite her neck, her shoulder, sealing their bodies together, fusing them into one being as he thrust deeper still, harder still. And then her fingers found his wings. The touch wasn't slicing, but gentle, such a gentle, tentative, wondrous stroke that he roared. Release barreled into him, and he rammed up into her in such a mighty thrust that she screamed, climaxing with him. She clamped around him, pulsing and milking, and he bucked, frenzied, reduced to this need to be in her, to spill into her, to spill as much of himself as he could. Nesta rode him until he'd stopped spurting,
until her pleasure had her draped over his chest, an arm still outstretched toward his wing. They clung to each other, and he tried to piece himself back together, to remember what the fuck his name was and where they were. But there was only her, only this female in his arms, and the only name he could remember was hers.
Nessa couldn't move. Wrapped around Cassian where he knelt in the center of the bed, his hands still digging into her ass to hold her in place, his cock buried deeply inside her. She didn't want to move. She'd never been this way with anyone, where one look from her lover brought her a heartbeat away from release. One look from him and she was taking off her clothes and pleasuring herself in front of him. She didn't have it in herself to be embarrassed, not when it had felt so good, so right. He was trembling, his wings twitching as his cock at last finished spending itself. She told herself she shouldn't enjoy it so much, seeing him undone, feeling his seed inside her, leaking out of her. And the fact that she did had her climbing away at last, moaning softly as she slid off his cock. She knelt before him, nearly knee to knee. "I still need more." Cassian's head lifted, eyes flashing.
"I know."
She couldn't breathe under that stare, that beautiful face. "How can I need you again so soon?" It wasn't a coy courtier's question. It was voiced out of sheer desperation, because she did need more. She needed him back inside her, needed his weight, his mouth and teeth on her. She had no explanation for it, that rising, unquenchable thirst. His eyes flickered.
"I've needed you from the moment I first met you, and now that I get to have you, I don't want to stop."
"Yes," she breathed, about as much of the truth as she'd admit. "Yes." They stared at each other for a long minute, for eternity, and then, to her shock and delight, Cassian hardened before her eyes.
"Do you see what you do to me?" he asked. "Do you see what happens every time I look at you? All fucking day?"
She smirked. "I vaguely recall you boasting weeks ago that I would be the one to crawl into your bed. It seems like you did the crawling." His lips twitched upward.
"It would seem so."
Her heart thundered as he held her stare.
"Get on your hands and knees,"
he ordered, his voice so low she could barely understand him. But her blood heated, and an ache that had nothing to do with how hard he'd just taken her began to build between her legs once more. So Nesta did as he bade, bearing herself, still wet and gleaming with both of their releases. He snarled in satisfaction.
"Beautiful."
She whimpered a bit, because beneath the praise, pure lust simmered. He growled,
"Put your hands on the headboard."
Her breath began sawing out of her again, but she obeyed, already thrumming with need. Cassian rose behind her, gripping her hips. He knocked a knee against each of her own, spreading her legs wider. Calloused fingertips brushed down the length of her spine, over the tattoo there, the ink binding them. He leaned to whisper in her ear,
"Hold on tight."
Chapter 42.
Cassian got the summons to the river house just after dawn. He hadn't slept in Nesta's room. No, after that second time, when his entire body had been turned to sated, content jelly, he'd rolled off her and returned to his own suite. She hadn't said anything. The understanding had been there, though. Just sex. But they needn't wait so long again. Sleep had been elusive as he'd thought of what they'd done, what he'd done to her. The second time had been even rougher than the first, and she'd taken everything he'd thrown at her, met his demanding pace and depth, and had held that headboard until her body had collapsed with pleasure. Gods! Sex with Nesta was like... He didn't let himself dwell on the comparisons as he sat in Reese's office next to Amron and Azriel, facing their High Lord across his desk. Those thoughts had not done him any favors last night, or this morning, when he woke hard and aching, and realized that the scent of her was all over him. He knew his friends smelled it. Neither Reese nor Az had commented, but Amron's eyes had narrowed.